Just a quick warning that we will be discussing heavy themes like abusive dynamics, death, gender dynamics, and as always, big existential themes. This is an unbleeped version of our thoughts as they come to us.
Vancouver, BC.
And I'm Nikki. I live in Ithaca. So you guys, welcome to our first episode of Have One On Me.
It feels like if we're a little bit off today, it's been a little while since we've recorded. If we're like more awkward than usual, our bad.
I like forget how to do this a little bit. Yeah. I was like, oh yeah, my name. My name comes next after Sims. That's right.
So welcome to our first episode from the album Have One On Me. Today we will be dissecting Easy.
Easy. I was telling my partner before we started recording that I kind of feel a little bit guilty when I think about Easy because I was really into a bunch of the songs from Have One On Me before the album came out. And then the album dropped and like one of the songs that our mutual best friend, Alicia, was like in love with from the get-go was Easy. And I was always like, like it was not my favorite song. And then like, you know, the years have gone by and like, I really love this song now. I really, really love it. But like, it was probably the last song to which I like learned all the words and stuff on this entire album. So like, I feel like a tinge of guilt for not having like appreciated Easy in all its glory from the get-go, but you know, there has to be some songs like that.
Yeah, oh for sure. And I think that like for me, I was so obsessed and am so obsessed with East still that I feel guilt for kind of this entire album. Like obviously there's highlights for me, like I'm someone who loves sad music, so for me like Go Long, Baby Birch, Does Not Suffice, Soft as Chalk, Kingfisher, like all of them.
Saddest ones.
Oh my God. My very favorites. But it was really fun to do this deep dive into Easy because I haven't really before.
I hadn't done at least this deep of a dive for sure into Easy before either. I learned a lot just from doing this research too.
In terms of time, Have One On Me was released in 2010. Was the album after Ease. It was produced by Joanna herself, Jim O'Rourke, and Noah Georgeson. This song specifically features drums, flute, trombone, multiple violins, cello, double bass, and obviously harp. On the Wikipedia page for Have One On Me, and I don't know whose choice this was, but there's like a sound clip to like get an idea of the style of the album. And whoever chose it chose the last 30 seconds or so of Baby Birch. So it's like from Told Me Wherever You Go, You Little Runaway. It's just like, why would you do that to people? That's such an unfair introduction.
Like diving right into like
right
the depths
in.
Of
no gentleness
at all.
Mm-mm.
Okay, I don't know, do you remember, Sam, just for yourself, like when Have One On Me came out, like were you stoked about its release then or was it too early?
I must have been. I mean, I was so young still, like I must have been. I think that it was probably one of those albums that I heard in friends' apartments the first few times. Like I certainly wasn't in line to get it Right. Like when it was first released. I do know that I had to like special order it a couple years later because it wasn't that easy to find, especially because it's a triple vinyl, which is incredible.
Which is incredible. Sam was telling me before that she was like about to reorder Have One on Me on vinyl. And then her partner was like, Sam, like, you have it. Do you not remember having special ordered this? And like
having to go to like the, I lived in Montreal at the time and having to go to like the little corner record shop and ask for it pretty please because it wasn't available in the stacks. Obviously it's a giant piece of work and you know, I guess at that time it just wasn't as widely available. I was like, oh yeah, I do have it. That's great.
That's hilarious to me. I don't have it on vinyl, so again, I feel like guilt. I feel guilt around Have One on Me, you guys.
Maybe we will resolve some of that now.
I hope so. Yeah, so as you said, it was released in 2010, in February of 2010. And yeah, so I was telling you before, Sam, like, I lost the fucking source for where I read this interview from, but I remember having read some interview somewhere at some point with her a couple weeks ago where she was sort of explaining her, where her head was at between the transition from East and Have One on Me. And she sort of described it as like, Have One on Me is like sort of more like grounded and down to earth and this like earthy, she didn't say more accessible, I forget what words she used to describe it, but she was like, look, like I have the quote here, Nikki.
I'm sorry.
You do?
Is it from an interview on quietest.com?
I have no idea.
So the quote that I have is quote, yeah, it's in less of a vacuum, but I would say that all three of my records have been equally personal. It's just that this record isn't so abstracted. It's more physical and earthy. Because of that, I also think that you feel the presence of the narrator as a woman as opposed to some weird genderless ether being.
Oh, cool. Oh, I really like, no, that wasn't the thing one. I was, okay. But I'm glad that you read that though, because I'm really stoked on her straight up just saying that gender is like a, is a component here. Mm-hmm. That feels validating to a bunch of the whatever, just lay analyses that I have of this album. No, but like it's a very similar quote, the one that I was thinking of. The only difference is that she like went into like she was like, when I wrote East, it was like way more complicated, like I like slaved over each and every word, and not just the words though, also like the structure, and you know, just made everything really complicated for myself. And then she had said something like, then with Have One on Me, I like wanted to let that all go. And she says, like, not to say that I didn't work as hard on each song, but I like started from a different place than I started when I was writing East. So I started from this more liberated sort of like, I can do whatever I want with this album. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, we'll see how that comes to pass throughout this, but I thought that was kind of interesting.
From the same interview, she says, in reference to the album as a whole, and specifically the title track, Have One on Me, it also refers to a kind of self-sacrifice that is a theme in a lot of the songs. It's a very feminine thing as well. It's the giving of yourself in those drinking terms, like pouring something from a bottle, and the level of the wine goes down and down and down with each glass that you pour and hand out. And then she references Lola Montez, which we'll get into in a later episode, I'm sure. But like this constant wandering and diminishment of the self through the giving of the self through performing. And just as the myth grew, the self shrunk until Lola Montez just died poverty stricken and alone with pneumonia, being cared for by Jesuit priests that she hated. The way women were and the way women are in that way, in that sense, is fundamental.
So oh my just like, God.
As we'll keep those pretty strong, brilliant themes in mind as we work our way through this album.
That is so fantastic. I love that quote. I hadn't read that before, and fuck yes, let's keep those things in mind. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
All right. I couldn't decide. Like at the beginning of East, we had said like some just sort of like broad themes throughout the album, but this one seems so big that it's like mm-hmm. hard to even start to do that. I mean, what you had read, Sam, though, I feel like does kind of that job, right? There's like self-sacrifice and like the consequences of that and like identity questions and this like gender sort of binary like also these like gendered expectations mm-hmm. That come up, I think, throughout. But yeah, it just feels like it's like so much happens on this album that it's hard to say in any like broad sweeping terms, I think.
I've read some people, and I forget where, so please forgive me, but some people describe it as like the experience of an entire relationship. So we begin the album with Easy, where she's easy to keep, and we end with Does Not Suffice. You know, and even that just says a lot. Yeah, and I don't know if I necessarily agree with that like overarching theme, but it does make sense for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've also read too that like it is like some people, well, not some people, I don't want to say that. Like there is a sense in which we're just witnessing and sort of experiencing this like disintegrating relationship until we get to the end, which is like Does Not Suffice, which is just like straight up her leaving. Mm-hmm. But like you said, I just don't think that it's as straightforward as that. Like I don't think you can say like, oh, this song comes after this song and like mm-hmm. that is because like the next thing that happened chronologically is like X or whatever. We'll see. I mean, one thing that I guess is an accessible thing to note, that is probably obvious to, I think, everybody, but that Easy does get, like, straight up called out on Does Not Suffice, right? So she says, like, how easy I was not. Mm-hmm. And so she does eventually call back to Easy in a way that sort of, like, reminds me of Divers and the way that the first track, Anecdotes, is related to the last track, Time is a Symptom. There's this like this non-accidentalness that those are the first and the last tracks.
And not only like this expanse of a relationship, but also like this path of a woman through that specifically. Like I think noting the changes in herself along the way mm-hmm. from being easy to keep to not easy at all. It's a ride for sure.
It is a ride, definitely. Okay, so let's, do you want to get into the lyrics?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
I have my lyric booklet here.
Sorry, one other thing that I forgot. Mm-hmm. I mean, just without knowing anything about the content of the album, I think it's kind of cool to keep in mind that I like didn't get for a very long time just the idea of alcohol and how it factors into mm-hmm. the album. So Have One on Me is like, I don't know if it's just me. Like, I always picture it being like an alcoholic drink that someone's buying for someone else at a bar. Mm-hmm. I don't think it has to be, but... So I think that just like that sort of connotation that is present even within the title of the album, I think is important throughout, especially in the title track, I want to say, but I think that it comes up over and over again. Okay. Let's do this.
Feel free to begin.
Okay, so I'll read the first verse. Mm-hmm. She says, easy, easy, my man and me. We could rest and remain here easily. We are tested and pained by what's beyond our bed. We're blessed and sustained by what is not said.
So for me, this just builds like the visual of that very sweet like morning or bedtime calm that can happen with a partner or partners in a relationship, that like all is well, all is good within like the very specific confines of this sweet little space that you guys have carved out.
Yeah.
For yourselves. And I think what stood out to me the most was like how quickly, like having just listened again to, I just listened to today, the Only Skin part two was released. We talked so much about sleep and how quickly I was just like, oh, like how contrasted the idea of bed and sleep is immediately to Only Skin.
Yeah.
Like, if you remember in Only Skin, I mean, I'm sure you remember, anyone else? You know, the partner in Only Skin who's sleeping through, you know, most of the relationship, most of the experiences that they had, and kind of ignoring, like, the world imploding around them. And right away, that's, the bed is kind of like an escape, like a...
Yeah,
I don't want to say a nice place to be, but almost a place where you can avoid everything else at the very least.
Totally. That's a really good point that I hadn't thought of. It reminds me of like that meme of like the dog who's sitting calmly at the kitchen table with like the fires around him.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
it's just like you can distract yourself. Like you don't immediately have to attend to the shit that's happening around you, right?
Yeah.
I also really love that right from the get-go, like if we hadn't heard from Joanna in the wonderful quote that Sam had just read, like other than easy, the first thing that she says on this entire album is "My Man and Me." She like contrasts and like explicitly names in a way that didn't happen in East, that there is a man and there is me. Mm-hmm. I think gender dynamics were very present on Ease, of course, but here she's just being way more upfront with it right away, right? Mm-hmm. My man and me.
It's very sobering right away too, right? Like I did feel like through all of Ease, we've kind of like found ourselves, like she said, in like these floating, shapeless bodies that we didn't necessarily want to assign a gender or a name to.
Yeah.
Because it was also blurry, but like you're right, right off the bat here, we are my man and me.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And the whole album kind of feels like that a little bit more. Like it's so, not that there is a single ounce of nonsense in East, but like it's to the point in a different kind of way. Dave, who is my partner, who makes the beats on this podcast, he I told him like we're starting this new album or whatever, and he was like, ooh, like let me make a beat with a song from Have One On Me. I was like, oh, cool. So he like started to like go through the different songs. I like suggested some really like cool sounds on the album for him. And he was like, holy shit, Nikki, this album is so fucking different from East. Yeah. He's like, how much easier it is for me to find something that I can take and like loop and like make into like the kind of beat that he normally makes. He's like, with East, it was like, there's this one part on Cosmia that she like repeats a bunch, and that's like pretty much my only option.
I'm so excited to hear what he will make.
They're so good. There's
Send them all to me, please.
I will. He's thinking of doing one per trip. Like there's, it's like a triple vinyl, right? So he's thinking of doing one per vinyl. Sick. He's done one on Good Intentions Paving Company. Cool. Yeah. He's done one on Have One On Me. Amazing. And he's done one on Occident, actually.
Nice.
They're really good.
I'm excited to hear. That's an awesome idea.
Good
job, Dave. Thank you, Dave.
Okay.
I mean, I think that it was really apparent to just like the contrast between, again, from Only Skin, like that relationship, the Only Skin relationship was tested and pained by what was in the bed. Right now, the bed is kind of like a place of peace. But then also the idea in this verse, I get a lot of like willful ignorance. Like it's a
yes,
it's a choice. it's a choice to stay in bed. They are blessed and sustained by what is not said. So they're avoiding talking about whatever they need to talk about. And their relationship is surviving on that, which again, like we talked about, does not suffice already, but like it does not suffice to merely lie beside each other as those who love each other do. Like that, you know, as we get through the album, we find that our narrator is like, it's not enough.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
A spoiler alert. It's not enough. Not enough. Yeah. Totally. And just like you said, Sam, like that. It's funny because like it's such a it's she's not directly saying this, but she's also like very much letting us know that like there is some reason why we're not communicating. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I was thinking like there's already kind of this dichotomy here because like the narrator here is being very hopeful about their relationship. Right. She's like trying to like sort of like siren song Kim into.
And what a good comparison too to all that we talked about in Colleen.
Yes. Yeah. Totally. Just side note, like I didn't think of this at all, and it's probably not on purpose, but when we first started saying easy, we had just been talking about ease, and I was like, oh my God, the first syllable on her new album is ease.
Yeah.
Like it's crazy. Anyway. Yeah, but I was thinking like, okay, so there's two ways you could take that they're not explicitly talking about something. There are two ways in which you could take that. So one way is like this really nice, intimate way where they're not communicating with words, but they're communicating like with like this intimacy that they just like know. Like Anita Franco has this line where she says, let me just think for one second. Speaking words, more formality, because we can feel we are of one mind. Like it's like this like intimate just like picture of like not having to like fill the silence with words with the person that you're closest with. Mm-hmm. But then there's also this like contrasting thing, which is like we are not talking about something, right? And I think both interpretations are sort of present within the one verse here.
Yeah, I very much agree. And it made me think of, you know, in Have One On Me when she talks about the big black spider hanging over her door. Mm-hmm. It's like she can't, like in the narrator in Easy, can't leave. It's like this lingering cloud hanging right above or beside or outside of the room where their bed is, and like to leave the bed is to like kind of break this contract, either between like her and herself, like she's not wanting to, they're not wanting to recognize that they know whatever isn't working, or like the contract between her and this man that she's with.
Yes. Yep. That's a really good point. That like not wanting to leave thing is actually, it's like, it's really interesting, I think, because that rises, I don't know how literally to take this, but like it rises to the level of like delusion that I think is really, really, really present throughout this album. And I like so hesitate to say that because of how often like craziness is used in this like very sexist way against women. But I think that there is a certain like amount of crazy making that can come from having to navigate like abusive, dysfunctional relationships, but also like the gender dynamics and dysfunction and expectations that are like that come with being a woman. And the idea that like she's saying to him, we could rest and remain here easily, is like, we can like stay in bed forever. It's easy. It's going to be fine. Like you don't have to think about anything else. And like clearly you fucking do. Of course you do. Yeah.
But in the short term, it is the easier choice.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Like to
just stay here.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like when I don't answer my emails, I'm like, I could just mark this as unread. And make my life way more difficult after, but like I'd rather just
but
not have to
respond. In the moment,
yeah.
Yeah. And it feels nice in the moment for a little while.
Feels nice in the moment.
At least.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, one thing to like pleasure is like this like giant theme on this album, I feel like. And yes. This is like an introduction to that. Also, like actually when I was just saying what I said there, I had assumed that here in the We Could Rest and Remain Here referred to like their bed. Mm-hmm. But it's not clear that it totally does. It could mm-hmm. like I have in my notes here, like where mm-hmm. is here?
It could be just like a moment in time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like right before the shit hits the fan. If yes. we ignore that it's piling up around us and no one turns the fan on, then
oh my
we're
God.
Okay.
Yes.
But
what you just said made me think of this quote I read from user name J Clay on Genius. Mm-hmm. And they wrote of Easy that Easy, the moment is an edge to tumble off from. Ooh, and I thought sure. that was such a nice way of putting it. That's exactly what it feels like. It's like describing this height, but this fucking precarious height where like danger is just infused throughout the whole song.
And like what an apt metaphor for the rest of the album too. Like we tumble down from here.
Yeah.
For sure. Ooh, I really like yeah. that.
Yeah, I really like that too. Actually, there's so J. Clay did a bunch of the annotations on Genius for this song, and I think that they did a phenomenal job with this song because there's just a bunch of shit I wouldn't have thought of, and I'm gonna like directly quote them cool. a couple times if that's okay. But yeah, I recommend me. Checking
Thank
out
you,
the
J.
Genius
Clay.
Page.
That's awesome.
Thank you, J. Clay.
I also have just some notes about like. The definition of easy can mean a couple different things. It can be something that is achieved without great effort, or it can refer to a period of time or way of life that might be free from difficulty or problems. Mm. In my interpretation, it's the latter in this yeah. verse. And I don't think it's fair to assume that this like moment frozen in time is necessarily free from difficulty or problems. But it's right. like that willful ignorance to kind of sit yes. in that choice.
Yeah. In that like moment. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe it's like in this moment in time, it is problem free in the physical sense, but I feel like a cloud of anxiety or distress. Yeah. Like you said, like we're about to tumble off a cliff. Like there's a dark cloud hanging this, right like, over us.
Yes, exactly. It's this ominous. Rain. Yeah, exactly. Another definition I was thinking of that I wasn't sure, I'm not sure whether or not that's happening in this song, is like the way that people call women who have sex like on the first date or something, like easy. And I don't know how much to think that sexuality plays into this album, in this song. I like tend to think a lot. Or at least some. And here I was thinking, like, it could be, like, she's also saying, like, look, like, particularly because she mentions the bed in the same mm-hmm. verse, right? So we're tested in pain by what's beyond our bed. It could just be, like, while we're having, like, this, like, pleasure-soaked time in bed, like, I am here for you, right? And, like, she is giving all of herself to him. Like, this song is about, like, I'll give my life. So she's like, you can have every aspect of me, right? Yeah, so I was wondering if that was like an intentional thing that she's calling to mind.
I like that idea in the sense that like, you know, sometimes giving your body is easier than, you know, talking to someone or working it out or whatever conversation that needs to be had. So I do think that makes a lot of sense. And I think the only other note that I have is like this first verse to me, you know, I was trying to think of like in if we're considering all of these things, like what is the opposite of easy? And it was less so hard and more so uneasy. Like it's not like you're leaving the bed and you're immediately faced with all of these impossible things necessarily, but maybe it's more so like things just get slowly more difficult. Yeah. Things get piled. Things come in layers.
Yeah. I've so had that exact experience too, that like, you're just like, look, if it were just you and I, like alone in a room forever, that would be great. Like, that's one thing. But mm-hmm. like, that is not the case. Like I remember thinking like, this was such an insight when I was like 18 or something, when I was like, love is not enough. Like, that is like a true statement that like yeah. is not a romantic thing to say, but it's not.
Yeah.
Because you have to function as a human being in this like insane, really complicated world with all sorts of different like expectations, both internal and external. I also wanted to read, if it's okay, mm-hmm. just a quick quote about like stepping back a little bit and talking about sort of like the way the words that she's using and like the feeling it evokes slash like the way she sings those things. So I think this is Jay Clay again on Genius. Yes, it is. So they write, the opening words in Have One On Me are relatively spare. The first four vowel sounds are practically identical, with Newsom elongating the E sound on both sides of a soft S for a stable, luxurious expression of ease itself. In a sense, these easies rhyme with themselves. Their parts reflect each other from either side of a consonant. They form a pulse that might be able to go on indefinitely and at the same rate. The pronoun me repeats the sound, and the adverb easily extends it further with another internal repetition of the same vowel sound in the third syllable, ly. So, like, just the beginning of the song, too, does sound so, like, luxurious, I feel like, is such a good word. Just, like, mm-hmm. she's just luxuriating and, like, being able to say, like, that one syllable with, like, a very soft S. And, like, the way she sings it is, like, delicate, too. Like, I thought that was cool.
Yeah, no, I really like that. And I think it makes sense with a lot of the stuff that we've already talked about, for sure. Like, the just those first two easies kind of paint a picture for us right off the bat.
Yeah.
Are we ready for the next verse here?
One very quick other note that I just thought of. When she says my man and me too, so I had already mentioned like the contrasting between like the man and woman, but then
Ozzy. What you doing, buddy?
I don't know what the hell he could be barking at this time of night. There's nothing happening. But
it's a raccoon.
It could be a raccoon. What was I gonna say? Oh yeah. So when she says my man and me, there's like I'm very attuned in this song to what or like when it starts to become aggressive or like more violent seeming and more scary and threatening.
Possessive and
Exactly. So when in the second like word that she says in this song is my, like we're getting the slightest little hint of like possession. Like if someone were to say like my woman, I'm like, don't say that. So like we're getting just a hint of this is a bit much, which I think becomes way more prevalent throughout the song.
Yeah, and it's easy. I think, you know, as we go throughout the song, we will see that she's kind of like asking to be possessed in that way. Like she wants to give herself to someone who is maybe not as willing to like denote that possession, to ask for that possession. And that she, that our narrator, just right at the beginning, kind of calls that out as really interesting.
Yes.
I wonder, you know, and I wonder about consent in that way, like how much of this, if they're not talking about it, has been agreed upon, and how much of it is just like a projection or a hope or a delusion in some way.
Yep, totally. And like, so there's like these like two levels on which I feel like it could be a delusion. One is like this woman is like just sort of nuts, which like there is a tiny bit of that, like when she's talking about like picking all of the petals off the daisy in a field so that she's the only one who can have him. I'm like, okay, we need to settle down a bit. But then there's also this level of delusion, which is like, no, like women in our society are like socialized to think in these kinds of terms. And so like collectively there's this delusion, but this particular woman is not crazy at all because she is just conforming to the expectations that have been set in place for a really long time for like what women should be like, right? And so she's just sort of taking these expectations to the extreme. And in doing so, it like sort of reveals how bonkers these expectations are. Mm-hmm.
And we also don't know his side of the story, right? Yeah. Like we have no idea what has been said before. We don't know what they've promised each other. We don't know at what point in their relationship this is coming. Is it day one? Is it 15 years in? Like we have no idea. So maybe this possession of each other has been well established and all of a sudden is falling apart. Like we don't know.
We don't know. That's a really good point, Sam, too, because actually like that very question confuses me a lot throughout this song because she keeps saying like, you know, like, let me love you or like I'm easy to keep. She's like trying to plead with him to keep her. But the, like, she also says like we're tested in pain by what's beyond our bed, which makes it seem like they share a bed already and they are already like their relationship is already vulnerable and experiencing these sort of like rough patches because they're tested and pained by these things. But there's an hour bed already to refer to.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just moving my mic here. Okay. So our next verse is, no one knows what is coming or who will harvest what we have sown or how I've been dulling and dumbing in the service of the heart alone. You know, so it's, you know, I think this is, to me is just like our narrator is not thinking with her brain right now. It's very much like a labor of the heart. And it's a little bit ominous here too, right? Like, I think it's true of any relationship in general that like when you endeavor into these partnerships, these romantic partnerships, when you fall in love, there is literally no way of knowing what will fall into your lap, how each person involved will react, how time will play out. But I also can't help but avoid the feeling that like it's just a little ominous.
It's super ominous. Yep.
Or that, like, our narrator is speaking to us from a place of knowing.
Yeah.
Like, they're in the future in some way. And they know what's coming, but we don't.
Well, it's just a very particular way of, it's peculiar, I guess, of phrasing. So no one knows what is coming, like, fair, but why are you saying that now? Like, if not to evoke some kind of, like, I don't know why that's an ominous thing, but if I were to say to you, like, Sam, like, no one knows what's coming, it, like, makes you feel like you have to brace yourself. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then this line in particular is, like, fascinating but also baffling to me. Or who will harvest what we have sown?
Yeah.
Who could it be? What is the thing that has been sown? Who are you thinking are the people who would harvest what you have sown if it's not like the two of you? Mm-hmm. What is it that you've sown?
Yeah. It could be the two of them too. Like which one of us will come out of this alive? Which one of us will come out of this
victorious?
Victorious, like, with some credibility or like some sense of themselves after this, like, you know, after we tumble down this cliff.
Yeah.
And it could also just be like a general reference to the things that are unknown for all of us. And I mean, like, throughout East, there were so many mentions of like these pastoral elements. We had the farm, we had Monkey and Bear, we had all of these elements. Even in Only Skin. And it also made me think of Colleen, mostly because that was the last episode we recorded, but also Colleen is trying to grow and she's unsuccessful in that, right? Like not root nor leaf nor flower nor bean lord.
Yeah.
To have sown something, to plant or seed by scattering in the earth, cause to appear or spread.
Yeah.
There's this Bible verse as well. Ecclesiastes 10:14. There's a bunch of different versions, but some of them were like, no one knows what is coming. Who can tell someone else what will happen after them? The English Standard Version said, this is all the same verse, just different versions. A fool multiplies words, though no man knows what is to be, and who can tell him what will be after him? The beginning of his talk is folly, and the end of his speech is evil madness. Yet the fool multiplies words, no one knows what is coming, and who can tell what will happen after them? And it just makes me think that, like, there's a step that we're missing in this analysis, that things have been said, and our narrator has been promised things, especially a fool multiplies words, much like the partner in Only Skin had made promises that they couldn't keep. Our narrator here is just maybe trying to, like, react to some of those promises that have been made to her.
Yeah. That's a really good point, Sam. And, like, I didn't even think about looking, which is, like, stupid. I feel like looking at the Bible is a helpful avenue, but I didn't even think to check that. And so as we were just talking, I just Googled Reap What We Sow Bible, because I know that that's a phrase that I've heard somewhere. And the quote that I got from Galatians is a man reaps what he sows. The one who sows to please his sinful nature, from that nature will reap destruction. The one who sows to please the Spirit, from the Spirit will reap eternal life. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. So I don't know, like, the who again in the who will harvest what you've sown is still a bit of a mystery to me, but it might be like who, like the good part, the good version of ourselves or the bad version of ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that a lot. And what was the last, sorry, can you read the last line again?
Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time, we will reap a harvest if we do not give up.
So it's like that idea of time again. Mm. And like, if we hold on, if we hang on to each other, if we hold on in this bed to what we have, maybe in the future, something good will come of this.
Right. If we don't give up, like, let's stick with this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. I like that too.
Also, like, I don't know why. No, I do know why, actually. This line in particular fucking kills me, and I love it so much. It's, like, one of my favorite lines on Easy. Where she says, so, the, like, dulling and dumbing part, right? So, part of that is that she's saying no one knows, like, this, this, and this. And part of it is, like, no one knows how I've been dulling and dumbing in the service of the heart alone. And that's just so fucking heartbreaking. And I don't like, cause I think something like this, like similar to this, is said on Genius, just so I'm crediting my sources here. But like, there's this question of like, who doesn't know this, right? And so like, when she says no one knows, is she like focusing on the fact that like her partner in this doesn't know that she's been dulling and dumbing in the service of the heart alone? Or is it this like wider audience that like, so this is again another quote that I had wanted to read from, I think, J. Clay, just like perfectly puts, okay. So first of all, like the dulling and dumbing, aspect of it, right, is like dulling as in like reducing one's light, right? And dumbing as in silencing a person. And both those things are so connected to this like loss of identity that Melissa Marchirano actually, like, in the Blessing All the Birds post called there's blood on the eye, femininity, masochism, identity, shame, and pleasure in Have One on Me, part one. She does this like excellent job of explaining these themes of loss of identity in this very like gendered sense, right? And so that she, the narrator, has been dulling and dumbing herself in the service of the heart alone is like speaks to the fact that these expectations are put on women to like be the loving and nurturing ones and to dedicate themselves wholly to like family and like the man in your life, if we're talking about these stereotypes, right? And like to diminish yourself, right? To like sort of erase yourself, to like make room for like whoever he wants you to be. Also, too, I should say, like, there's, like, this interplay between, so dulling and dumbing. The dumbing part is both brings to mind dumbing as in, like, dumb as in not able to speak. So mm-hmm. silencing. But then also, like, dumbing as in making more stupid.
Or to make something easier.
Yeah, or, yeah, exactly. That's interesting. Yeah, right. Which is also this very feminine coded thing, which is like, I mean, to make yourself stupider in order to like make men feel better about themselves is very much a thing that women have to do and have been doing for a very long time to just like sort of make the men not feel threatened, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think there might be some sort of double entendre there.
And to do so in the service of the heart kind of like evokes like a you know better. Like you know, yeah, you know better. This is servicing only your feelings. You know that maybe these are choices that will come back to bite you later. Just like you said, like sitting in the bed, you can see all the problems arising around you, but you're dulling and dumbing those as well.
I'm serving this one thing, even though I recognize that there are different things that people need to service in their lives, right? That like you might like there might be consequences that will arise from not having attended to these like all sorts of different facets that we have to attend to as human beings. Yeah. The quote that I had wanted to read from J. Clay that I just love, they say, it suggests something about the plight of women whose lives are reduced to being in the service of the heart alone, who are thereby held back from personal achievement and made to lose or lower their voices. In the service of the heart alone, while implying a life devoted to love and relationships above all, imparts a sense of loneliness or isolation within relationships, as if attending to the heart alone can make one feel, in turn, alone, right? Like, no one knows, like, the true me or, like, who I am, actually, because I've been fucking with, like, myself, like, my very identity in order to service this thing.
And it's in such contrast to kind of like the sentiments in You Will Not Take My Heart Alive, which is very much the opposite. Like you can't. This is a part of me that you cannot take versus I'm giving you all of it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and I think it ties back to so much about what we talked about in Only Skin, that like idea of one partner servicing the needs of others before themselves.
Right.
And then another partner serving themselves first.
Yes.
One partner putting the relationship before themselves. And that just like all-encompassing idea of fire from Only Skin, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. the dog sitting in the room of fire meme, and it's very much it as well.
It's also just a sad fucking fact that in order to service the heart alone, if that's what your goal was, that women need to dull and dumb themselves. It's just a sad thing that like you don't even notice that I'm doing this because like this is just like how you expect women to be, but like I've been like actively, you don't even know how much I'm trying, right?
Yeah.
I feel that way so much sometimes where you're like, you don't even know how much I've been like fulfilling this role that is expected of me by being like whatever the perfect woman is supposed to be, which is like very contradictory and like confusing. Yeah, but I've been like sacrificing myself and erasing myself in the process.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel all of that in this verse very much.
Okay, is it okay if I read the next small one?
Yeah, please.
Okay, so the next one starts with the word or. So she's continuing the, like, no one knows what is coming, or this, mm-hmm. or how I am worn to the bone by the river, and in the river made of light, I'm your little life giver. I will give my life.
Yeah, little life giver. It's a real heart-wrenching one. But my brain first goes to the bone and the river and the light, which was so strong all throughout East. And, you know, she is worn to the bone by the river as if she is laying in the river. If the river's made of light, you know, the meteorite is the source of the light.
Yeah.
And I don't really understand it in this sense. Like, worn to the bone, I get you're mm-hmm. doing all you can to, you know, give yourself to someone else's desires, to mm-hmm. this role that you're trying to fulfill.
Yeah.
By the river and in the river made of light.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a brutal image to be worn to the bone in this way. And I want to assume that this is like the same body of water that our narrator has been trudging through since the beginning, since Emily.
And for a fucking long time.
Yeah. If it's not the same exact struggle, the same exact body of water, then it's like a very similar one.
Yeah.
And this is also like all one clause. Like,
yes.
One is what will be sown from the harvest. Two is the dulling and dumbing and the service of the heart. Three, like, the river is wearing our narrator down to the bone. And I think that, like, the connecting fiber here is that no one knows these things, right? So this experience is a secret in itself, like a very deeply personal
one. Thing. Yes, exactly. Yeah, and, like, for what is coming is, like, the, like, initial thing that, like, yeah, and... Like you said, it's a personal experience because it's like this one person's lived identity. And she's like, it's like this confessional time where she's like, hey, like, no one knows all this, but whoever's listening, like, I'm telling you this.
And that's what made me feel like it was coming from the future too, right? Like, it's very much almost like a journal entry that you read, you know, from... years behind. And also just made me think so much of Colleen and Colleen's experience and how unspoken that experience was. We know how that played out for the rest of her story, as we do about Bears. We're heading towards the same cliff.
As we do for the narrator, exactly. Like, it's just
our
no
poor
good.
Narrator.
Our poor narrator. Actually, so that made me think of this thing that I didn't bring up that I have in my notes, but just relating to the previous verse, the tense with which she says, or how I've been dulling and dumbing. So just to refresh your guys' memories, she says, no one knows what is coming or who will harvest what we have sown. Or this like change of tense, how I've been dulling and dumbing in the service of the heart alone. I wrote down, I'm not smart enough to know this by myself, but on Genius, I think it referenced the fact that this, the dulling and dumbing part, is in the present perfect continuous tense, which is just like it communicates that you've been both doing this thing in the past and that you are currently doing it. So it's not just like the example that I saw on like Wikipedia or something was like, the difference between I have painted the room and I've been painting the room mm-hmm. is like significantly different. I have painted the room is like I'm done with that, right? I've been painting the room is like I am still engaged in this process and have been engaged in this process, right? And she uses that tense to say that I've been dulling and dumbing. So she's still doing this she has been doing this. And it's like this continuous thing that's been going on throughout this narrator's life. Yeah.
This statement too of, I'm your little life giver.
Yeah.
Is another possessive thing too, right? So our narrator has made it clear that this is their man and that now they are their little life giver.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
oops, possessive. It's really
interesting.
Possessive. Yeah, it's very interesting. And also the word little to describe the life giver part also communicates to me, or like makes me think of femininity again, where we're supposed to just diminish ourselves, both like metaphorically and like literally spatially. We're supposed to be like tiny and skinny and like taking up little space. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Also here, life giver is this like ambiguous thing between like the narrator saying to her partner, like, I can give you a good life, right? Like, I'm your little life giver. I'll give my life to you, right? I'll sacrifice what I am for you. But then also like this very feminine thing, which is like, yeah, also I can like create life because I can get pregnant and have babies. This also, I didn't say this before, but in the line where she says, no one knows what is coming or who will harvest what we have sown. Mm-hmm. I was thinking like maybe if we're talking about like seeds that have been sown, that like we don't, and like sort of calling forward a bit to Baby Breach, maybe like when she says, like, we don't know who will harvest what we have sown. It could be like, we don't know who our child is going to end up being, right? Like, sure. We don't know who that person is. Sorry. Also, I'm jumping all over the fucking place. One other thing I wanted to mention before about sown was that it is spelt, as far as I can tell. So on Genius, it says it's spelt on the vinyl, S-E-W-N. But...
oh, it is.
Yeah. So that seems to be a misspelling or something, some significance to it, to that spelling that I just don't understand. But like S-O-W-N, right, is the way that you'd say like we've sown seeds.
And that's what it is on like as sung.
Right.
Which is really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Sam, you had the vinyl in front of you that you just checked?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it is S-E-W-N.
Yeah. Huh. So, it's interesting. I don't know if it's a misspelling or if it means something.
So, as meaning to attach something to something else by sewing.
S-E-W?
S-E-W-N. Yeah. To like, you know, literally attach yourself to someone else.
Right. Right.
And that's brutal.
That is brutal, and that also makes me think of like conceiving a kid, right? Like a baby.
Sure, yeah,
like attached ourselves together to form this thing.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
That is interesting. Okay. So before we had started recording, I had asked Sam if she had gotten into Dante's Inferno in her research. And she was like, I had not. And I was like, okay, good. But also, like, have you read it? And she was like, I have not. And I was like, shit, because me neither. But I feel like it comes up here. And then again and again in the album, because I did some research just on Rivers of Light. Oh, and what that might be referring to. And what I found was that it is a reference in Dante's Inferno in the Divine Comedy. And, okay, let's see what I have on this. So it comes up in Dante's Divine Comedy and Dante's Inferno because, so basically like a pilgrim, I guess, who is the main character of the story. And just forgive me, you guys, I don't know this story. I haven't read it. I've just researched this one particular part. So the pilgrim is with another character in the story, Beatrice, and they reach like the highest level of, I guess, divinity. So like a heavenly level, right? And basically, like, Beatrice, the other character, says to Dante, look, everything that you're going to see on this level, on this plane of existence, is filtered through, like, what God has decided, like, is accessible to you. So, like, we've filtered, like, divinity into terms that you will understand as, like, a mere mortal, right? And so he gets like these different apparitions, which I thought was interesting because apparitions sort of calls towards like Bloody Mary at the end.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't know exactly how to connect that though, but basically he's like, okay, so like he is experiencing these different apparitions, and one of the apparitions that he sees on this like heavenly level is this river of light. And he like is blinded by it at first, but then his eyes adjust and he like goes and checks it out and drinks from the river. Interestingly, the description that I read said that he was drinking from the river like an infant would drink from like a mother's breast or something like that. Mm-hmm. Then, like, I guess God turns that river into, rather than being like a length of river, it is then turned into a circle of river, which is like a circle of light then. So, like, the takeaway from this that I got from Spark Notes is basically just the idea that, like, there are some things in this world that are too real and, like, too divine, but, like, also, like, just experiences that cannot be boiled down to these representations. And so I thought that was kind of a cool meta statement of her, like being like, look, this river of light that I keep invoking is like, it calls to mind the idea that like this song as a representation of my love or like these dynamics or our relationship, or the album even, right, is just not sufficient to actually capture like what the realness of what is going on. It has mm-hmm. to be dumbed down in this way.
It does not suffice.
Right. It does not suffice. Yeah, exactly. So that's what I found on the River of Light stuff. I mean, the other stuff that I had was just that like in the Bible, but also like in life, rivers are symbolic of like fertility, but also as being like the basis for all of civilization, because like the Nile, which would like flood I think every year, is what made the ground fertile for Egypt to like mm-hmm. happen. The only reason that that happened is because of this river providing like nourishment, right, in its flooding. And so I thought, like, maybe there's a cool analogy there happening, or like whatever comparison happening between fertility and givingness, like giving life, right? And like the life giving that is being talked about in the river. Yeah.
No, I like that a lot. And it makes me think of, you know, like a mother does give herself to her child, to their child,
yeah,
with the breast and with love and with yes. whatever else.
And to the man, like,
yeah.
Like, unfortunately, yeah. that role gets extended into this partnership, which turns out to not be this like equal footed partnership.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Traditionally, at least.
Traditionally, right. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Also, I meant to say this before, Sam, but when you said like the bone and river was making you think of Ys, mm-hmm. she has that like line later too where she says, when I broke my bone, I think this is in California, when I broke my bone, you carried me up from the riverside.
Yeah. Interesting. Like the entering versus, or like the being in versus the leaving of the river.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
One thing too, sorry, I'm talking so much. I'm so sorry.
I'm here for it.
Whenever I listen to these things and am editing them, I'm like, Nikki, shut the fuck up and let Sam talk. It's horrible.
Oh, it's so hard to listen to ourselves too. Like I said to Nikki today, like I listened to it on my long walk, but I had to listen in like 1.5 speed because like listening to my own voice is too much.
But my favorite part of the podcast is listening to your own voice.
And I like listening to yours, but I can't to my own. It's too much.
Okay, so the thing that I also noticed that I'm hesitant to say and I might cut out of this is that... Okay, so I know, like, I... Okay, so we don't want to be we don't want to be biographical about this. We don't want to talk about like Joanna's personal life and stuff. However, we also know that Joanna like dated Bill Callahan, right? And then they broke up around this time. A lot of people consider this like a breakup album. And just as being a Bill Callahan fan, which I know is controversial for Joanna Newsom fans, but whatever, I like him. I just know that Bill Callahan is fucking obsessed to a weird extent with referring to himself as a river. He does this over and over again throughout his song catalog. And so here when she's saying like how I am worn to the bone by the river, I'm just wondering like how much of it has to do with like, I'm also alluding to the fact that I'm worn to the bone by
you.
Yeah.
By everything you do.
Yeah.
Interesting.
What do you think, Sam? Should I keep that in or should I edit it out?
I mean, we talked about him in whatever the fuck episode we talked about him in.
Yeah.
So you can see how we feel about it in 6 months when this episode comes out. Yeah.
True. Okay. I apologize, you guys, if I decide to keep this in because, like, I don't want to talk about her personal life at all. I just thought that was an interesting thing that, like, I can't not think of when I think of this. But that is the most personal I'm ever going to get. And whatever. Doesn't matter.
I watched yesterday a bunch of her interviews. And I love so much the silly ones, like that ridiculous one, the 7 minutes in heaven.
Oh, my God.
Where they drop the keyboard onto the chicken.
Dude, that shit is so good. And she has her like little orange hoodie up over her head.
Oh, it's so funny. And when she is interviewed by Nardwar, those are probably my favorite ones because they're so silly and nonsensical. Like, I so much more appreciate that than
her being all serious.
Yeah, just because I think of her, I think of her in, you know, in my brain so often as someone who is very serious. And it's just so nice to see like the
silly
goofiness.
Joanna.
Yeah.
She's married to fucking Andy Samberg, so I feel like she has that element to her that we just don't get like exposed to very much, but like it's there.
It's hard to pull out of these massive, massive epic pieces of work.
Yes.
Pieces of work of hers.
I remember like this very vivid experience of after the concert that I went to in September of 2019, I guess, of hers. Where someone had reviewed the show that I was at in New York as they were like referring to her playing Sawdust and Diamonds. And they were like, she has this like really like comedic line in Sawdust and Diamonds. And already I'm like, oh, what are you talking about? And they were like, she keeps saying like, why the long face? And like, it sounds so funny when you hear it in person. And like, for me, I'm like, dude, it is fucking not funny.
Were you listening?
The heaviest shit in the world. But also, like, I could totally see Joanna as being someone who has that, like, levity for herself, like, that her friends, including me, are just, like, too serious about her work. But, like, I can't not think of it in this, like, super serious way. The most I've ever liked Andy Samberg, which I do like him, but is in this interview where he said, they like somebody asked him like, are you going to collaborate with your wife ever on music stuff? Cause like he has like Lonely Island music stuff. And he was like, oh, we've talked about that, but I think her fans would actually kill me because she makes like actually important, serious music. And I was like, oh, like, thank you so much for understanding. Like, I'm so sorry that we feel that way, but like, I do feel that way. I'm so sorry. I'm watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine right now. It's really good. He's hilarious. He's a great comedian, but I feel like those things are so separate in my mind, the emotionalness with which I experienced Joanna Newsom music.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Thank you so much for joining us in this part one of Easy. We had a really hard time letting go of Ys, but we are very happy to be here in Have One On Me. We have an Instagram, which I run, and I never remember the name, but I believe it is a Hopeless Endeavor podcast. Mm-hmm. We would love if you sent us all of your bigger, small feelings, thoughts, theories, all of it. We love it. Your covers. Oh, man, the covers are incredible.
They're
please
so good.
Send us. Yeah. Our email is ahopelessendeavor@gmail.com. Nikki runs our Facebook group, which is
A Hopeless Endeavor, the Joanna Newsom podcast. Yeah, please send us whatever you want. You guys, like, send us shit that like you think we've already covered in our time because we're like very ahead of recording. Like when we're recording is ahead of when you guys are listening, but editing is a magical tool and we can edit shit in. So just send us your thoughts and theories about whatever you want. And we are so happy to include them in future episodes. Thank you guys so much for listening and we will see you next week with part two of Easy.
Thank you so much for listening, guys.